da-da-da-da-da! From Chris and Andy's world, I present The Blue Baggers, a show dedicated to the Carlton Football Club, the old dark navy blues, the Blue Boys. So strap in, crack a tinny, relax, tally-ho, gents. Transmission beginning 3, 2, 1...
Chris and Andy here, bringing you the latest episode of The Blue Baggers.
On this episode, we'll discuss the game review versus Richmond. We'll talk about who's got a lift for Carlton, what's giving you the Bradley Pitts. We'll also look at the Saints game at the MCG this week, talk about famous numbers, and a little bit of discussion re Canelio potentially coming to Carlton as a destination club.
Very exciting. But from the top of the show, Andy, where were you for the West Coast game?
Yes, I apologise. We missed the West Coast review because I was...
And there will be a lot of sad listeners out there.
Yeah, a lot of sad listeners. Look, wasn't a bad game. I was sunning myself up in Queensland, so...
You were croc hunting.
I was croc hunting in... I wish I was croc hunting.
Well,
I was
croc hunting as in observation.
Yes, I was observing crocodiles. So I did miss the West Coast. I saw the West Coast game in a pub up in Queensland, and I saw the Richmond game in a pub up in Queensland. So I'm all up to date, so there's no worries about that. I've seen the games.
Fantastic. Well, let's get on with it.
All right, so let's have a look at the loss to Richmond on the weekend. Sunday's
28-point loss.
28-point loss at the MCG. What are your thoughts on the game, Chris?
First thought is it shouldn't have been 28 points. We was robbed, the last goal especially. But look, it was a game of two halves in a way, wasn't it?
It was. We really came out playing the same old kind of dumb football. I hate to say it, but just kicking around the corner. We got how many intercept marks in that second quarter?
Well, yeah. We went half time, we kicked one goal, yeah, and just before half time.
And I honestly didn't think there was going to be... I was wondering who's going to score the goals, because it looked pretty dire there for that first half.
Yeah, in the first half. We went back to old football. We say regularly at the moment, but the amount of intercept marks around that forward sort of 50-metre line was unbelievable. We didn't learn our lesson from the West Coast game.
No, we didn't. And look, it was a wet game of football, so there obviously is a bit of leeway in terms of the skill, but you can't, you know, if you're kicking it around the corner and you're kicking 40 metres out and it's getting intercepted, you've got to change up the game plan because something obviously wasn't working.
Yeah, so do we look at that as being strategy from the coaches, in particular the head coach, or do we look at that as players not executing to the plan, or is it a combination of both? Because, I mean, I tend to think that the head coach still takes the responsibility, whether it's the strategy or whether it's the players executing their game plan. It's an interesting one, but it wasn't a great half of football, let's be honest, and it wasn't enjoyable. It was frustrating viewing.
It was very frustrating, but look, we came back in the second half and we were quite, you know, kicked a couple of consecutive goals and we started to look good. There was always that glimmer of hope that we were going to come back with that big fourth quarter, but it wasn't to be.
Yeah, well, it looked like we were back in the match and we were sort of, I guess, put the same output as what they had, and we were matching them, weren't we? We didn't look a worse team for the second half, I didn't think, anyway.
No, and look, and to be honest, you know, the last 2 weeks we've played West Coast and Richmond, who are no slouches. They're both they'd both be favourites for the premiership. So, you know, I think probably under a different regime, maybe earlier in the year, that could have been a 10-goal blowout. But we kept it down. Like you said, the scoreline didn't flatter us at the end because that was a poor decision where the mark was paid.
Yeah, and I think as Carlton supporters, we started thinking that perhaps it was going to go one of those ways of a 10-goal loss. So, the second half was definitely encouraging.
Massive credit to the players for actually staying within the game, because they're both good teams.
And you're right, though. I think that's the important part. We were up against some red-hot opposition, and I'd go to say, like you said, premiership favourites. Certainly, I thought so after the West Coast game that we're playing against the premiers here, or at least grand finalists, and I had the same feeling against Richmond as well.
Yeah, so... you know, the game got, obviously, the weather got increasingly worse, and and we still managed to find some goal kickers. So there's some good positives, but I mean, you know, looking at the disposal efficiency for the game, I think Richmond was 69% to our 57%.
And that definitely showed, particularly the first half. We just weren't as clean. You know, they were a good kicking team and it was wet, but that first half they were almost playing with a dry football than what we were, and they looked like they had a lot more numbers than we did. And I think their disposal efficiency was or kicking efficiency in particular was a big part of that. So I also thought personally of the centre clearances. I noticed it while watching the game, and certainly after looking at some of the stats afterwards. What were they? 13-4 centre clearances.
Yep. And we won the the ruck hit outs. So
yeah, so you're always going to be on the back foot, aren't you, if you're conceding that many centre clearances. And
obviously we were playing a lot through the wing, whereas Richmond they slingshot
and they look for the corridor, don't they?
And do you know what, they execute it well, and that's what really killed us.
So anything else stand out about the game for you?
Well, my man Liam Jones,
your man, under very trying circumstances, and what a courageous effort that was after the death of his mother.
Yeah, unbelievable to
be out on the ground.
To be out on the ground, and he's amazing. He's one of our most important players, and that just shows he really curtailed Rewalt to how many goals did he kick in the end?
I think it's just the one.
Yeah, because it looked like Lynch and Rewalt were going to really pile it on early.
Yeah, and I guess his defensive brother Wiedering, if we're going to talk about Jones's performance, was very solid as well.
Yeah, unbelievable. Obviously, the same old from our captain, Paddy Cripps, who had 37.
Yeah, and I thought, look, he started a bit slow. He got 37 touches, and he actually looked like he was fumbling the ball a little bit, which is very un-Cripps-like to start with.
He did. Some of his disposals in the first quarter, second quarter, weren't great, but it is very unlike him. But
and just below his knees a little bit, he was fumbly. Probably not so much as Silvani was with the cake of soap. For a lot of the game, anyway, he was playing with a cake of soap. Some were playing with dry footballs.
I don't know how Silvani would go in prison if that's how he handles a cake of soap. But he was, and it's a weird thing because Cripps and Silvani, I kind of looked towards as kind of ideal
wet weather footballers.
Yeah. So it was a bit of an off day for Jack Silvani, but he's given us plenty in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, and look, he came strong like the rest of the team in that second half. Yep. And yeah, I mean, Cripps, 37 disposals, led the way, and a lot of that inside grunt, and with all the attention he receives on hand off the ball, there's a huge effort still.
And there was one player out there that looked like it was a dry weather game.
Yeah, hit me.
The Cowboy. Sam Petrescu-Seaton. He would have to be our best wet weather footballer. He's done it a couple of times. A couple of years ago against Collingwood when he kicked those goals in the wet at the G.
Just super clean, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
And from a place that probably doesn't experience that much rain necessarily. He played with a different football out there.
He was
great. Which is impressive to see. And that move to the half-back line is really paying off. It's giving us a lot of drive out there and, you know, good clean disposals coming out of our back line. And when, you know, Jones repels it, Wiedering repels it, there's that outlet. So he continues his rich vein of form. He's been a real plus for the season.
Who do you want ball in hand? Who do you have the most confidence in?
Football in hand?
Yes.
Okay, good. Clarification.
Yep.
Look, he's probably right up there, whether it's on the right or the left. He can use them both.
Yeah, he's definitely...
You know, the other one, if you can ask that question... Liam Jones.
Yeah.
And he takes risks.
He does.
Takes risks, doesn't just do the easy kick out of the back line. And,
no, he tries to switch it. But, I mean, you know, in fairness, there have been a few pretty bad turnovers he's had in the last couple of months. Not necessarily
the last couple of weeks. And he does really sort of take it on.
No, he does. But I feel, I'd put SPS in a different league with him in terms of who I've got more confidence in with ball in hand.
So we've discussed some of the better players that we think. Is there anyone else that sort of stood out or anyone else you'd like to comment on their game?
Well, I think we should discuss maybe who's got a lift.
Yeah.
Look, I don't like doing this all, you know.
Do you want to do votes first?
We'll do the votes. So I've written down for my 3-2-1, I've got one vote to Mark Murphy, who I thought was really good.
Absolutely.
Kicked a goal. We'll talk about that goal later.
And when we talk about that too, I think, you know, sort of going back to what we were discussing, I think the old guard played pretty well on the weekend and stood up, which is good to see. You know, you'd hope some of the younger blokes would, and a few did, but the old guard really stood firm. Murphy, yep. Kerno.
Simpson,
so...
Yep.
All right, so one vote.
Yeah,
Mark Murphy.
Mark Murphy. I'd go two votes for Captain Cripps. I think 37 disposals. I mean, it's an unbelievable game. Like you said, he's getting tagged, and he really kind of kept us in that second half. And I think the three votes, I don't think we're going to differ too much on this one. It'd have to be Liam Jones, who is an absolute marvel at the moment. And, our best defender and probably up there with Cripps as our most important player.
He's going to do all right, isn't he, with the best and fairest, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's going to steal some Brownlow votes, I've got a feeling.
And it's obviously he's going to miss the next 2 weeks, I believe.
Yeah, which is a real pity to come out of the game on top of the bad news he received last week.
Yep.
What is he? A fractured larynx. So the throat,
which is similar to what Ed Kerno had.
Yeah, look, hopefully it's not as bad as Ed Kerno's, because that kept him out for a while, and that was quite a serious injury. So,
do we know if it was suffered during the game?
I think it was suffered during the game, and he sort of noticed it after the games in the locker rooms, and... that's when it was sort of diagnosed. That's my understanding anyway.
We just before we get to your votes, we did have a bit of a scare with someone though, didn't we?
Go on.
Mitch McGovern went onto the bench for, I think, 8 minutes, and it just looked like it was Groundhog Day.
Tracksuit top on.
It was Groundhog Day.
Every game this
Every
year,
game he
it?
Goes off, but he always comes back on. And like, apparently there was no injury. It was just a rotation issue. But, you know, there was... after a month of hard work on the track with Russell, that could have been potentially a really bad...
Yeah, and it was following script again, wasn't it, for his season so far? But look, I thought he had a good game. I thought he presented well. He got the two goals in the end.
Yep.
One helped me with a very handy multi-bet, which I was very appreciative of. But I thought he looked a lot leaner. He jumped a lot cleaner. He moved around the ground a lot better and competed fairly hard. Not huge stats, but I thought he had a good return.
So who's your 3, 2, and 1?
Well, look, we might have watched from different states, but we're probably going to be fairly similar with this one. And I've got my one vote for Mark Murphy. No, I don't have it for Mark Murphy. That's a lie. I've got my one vote for Patrick Cripps.
Yes.
I have two, as we discussed, wet football specialist.
Yep.
The Cowboy.
SPS.
SPS.
Good vote.
And I've got three votes for Jones. No surprise.
Yeah, and look, and there's also, you've got to... have special mention to Ed Kerno, had a great game with 34 disposals, and Dale Thomas had a fair bit of the ball, and like we said, Simpson had a really good day as well. So
similar votes. I could have been less similar if I hadn't mucked it up, but
you can't give them to everyone.
No, that's it.
No. So kind of leads me to we talked about the best players.
There's got to be some punishment, doesn't
there? There has to be. So who's got a lift? And my main one that I've got is Zach Fisher.
Yeah, look, I couldn't agree more with you.
What is happening with that kid's game?
I've got some concerns. I've got some more concerns, bigger concerns than just the past game.
Yep.
I thought he was ready to fly this preseason. I thought he was ready to take the league by the scruff of its neck. He had a good preseason, and he just looked the exact type of midfield we needed. Fast, in and under.
He just hasn't done it this year, has he?
No, not really, and he seems to be sort of dropping off even more. I mean, he missed last week with sickness, I think it was.
The week previous against Adelaide, yeah.
Yeah, okay, the prior week to that. And look, my concerns with him now when I'm looking at games is he's not going to outmark anyone in the air.
No.
So he's a liability in the air. He's very left-sided. He's not going to kick on the right side, so he can be corralled because he's not going to kick on the right. And if he's not a threat in the air... he's not dual-sided.
Yep.
What's he bringing? And at the moment, we're not even seeing sort of any breakaway pace.
No, not at all.
He's not getting much of it either. I mean, what are his stats for the last couple?
He had 10 on the weekend, 11 against West Coast, and as you pointed out, he obviously missed the Adelaide game through sickness. But there was one part of the game against Richmond I noticed where Murphy had it on the half-forward line, and Fisher ran past and demanded the ball, and got it, but he wasn't, like you said, he wasn't on that right-hand side, and it's too predictable, and as a result, the ball got turned over, and you got to have a left foot, or you got to have an opposite foot.
Particularly if you're not going to be a threat in the air whatsoever, and ground ball's going to be your specialty. And look, speaking of sort of running by and asking for the handball receiver, on the wrong side of the body. I saw Nick Newman do it as well, which I think led to holding the ball turnover goal. Okay,
he does not have a right foot.
No, so we've got a few of those, and it's good to have left-footers in the team because, you know, that's that Hawthorn model. But
and Simpson's got away with it.
Yeah, he's got away with it, but maybe that's just craft. That's just football craft. But look, my concerns with him aren't necessarily for the immediate, but it's sort of that longer term because I sort of had him as a lock for being one of, you know, a 5 to 10 year player and consistent output. And I've just got some of those concerns because, you know, and we do kick to him in the air. That's the problem as well. So. And he's not going to beat anybody, let's be honest. Not at his height, not at his size.
We shouldn't be kicking to him. I mean, in the air, that's, you know, that's kind of not as much his fault as it is the person kicking it to him. It's just not where, exactly, it's not his strength. It's not where it should be getting put. But look, you know, Wiedering obviously came into the league. He had a great first year. He had that second year blues. He's now, you know, he's having a tremendous year this year. Fisher's in his third year. And yeah, it's... whether or not it's just an off year, and look, he's a young player,
and they have them. We know that.
But they do.
Yeah, but I'm just looking at that longer term, and just he's not going to grow any taller. We know that it's going to be hard for him to put on too much size. Yep. So that marking ability is always going to be an issue. He doesn't have that sort of Eddie Betts leap on him, and if he's being pushed to one side, it limits what he can do.
Yep. The other player I had down for needed to lift was Lachie O'Brien, and look. I don't put him in the same category as Fisher in terms of... O'Brien had a pretty good game against West Coast. I think he had 18 disposals. The weekend, he wasn't great. I think he had one or two disposals up to... I think he was donuts in the first quarter.
Might have been. He had a very average first half and stood out even more so than some of the other players. And look, I tend to agree with you too, but he has had a couple of good weeks. And under Teague, he certainly lifted. So I'm not... too concerned. I think he's probably just had a bad day or a down day. And in the wet, with his sort of physique, you weren't expecting him to be huge with the run and carry, which is what he brings. But,
I expect more, to be honest. And, you know, he did have a good week the week previous. But the week before that against Adelaide, I think he had under 10 disposals. Look, again, he's a young player. But we just need him to lift because we need the consistency. And if his role's going to be... that's the other thing. He's not there to be in and under. He's
an outside player, and maybe we didn't get it out to him as well. Or I didn't think he had the appetite on the day. I remember looking and just going, geez, you're not cracking in. You're sort of standing on the back of packs and you're not chasing. It looked like he was showing little interest, which is a bit concerning.
Yeah. So, look, might have had an off day, but he has got to lift.
And I think probably the big one, the elephant in the room.
Yep.
Darcy Lang. And like, I'll come straight out with it. I just don't know what he brings to the team, to the club, and I don't know what he might bring in a couple of years' time either. At least the others are younger. I know he's still young, but you can see the upside.
How old is Lang?
23.
So he's very young.
He looks a little bit older than what he actually is.
Yeah, he does.
No,
that's it. He won't play this week. He has to be dropped.
How many touches?
He had four on the weekend. He had five the week previous and nine. And look, he kicked a goal in the Adelaide game, a goal in West Coast. But look, if you're getting four disposals, I just don't understand what he brings to it. I don't think he plays for Carlton this year, and I don't think he'll play beyond next year, to be honest.
And I think that's the question. If I was to ask you, what does he bring to the team? What are his, you know, better than average AFL standard attributes? Yeah. What are you giving me?
Yeah, that's it. He's you know, he's by no means a speedy player. No, he doesn't bring a lot.
Doesn't bring toughness, doesn't bring speed necessarily, doesn't bring cleanliness, doesn't bring a presence.
No. And look,
not great with his hands, not great by disposal.
No.
And he's not getting it.
No. And he's, look, I'll be absolutely amazed if he plays this week.
You'd be amazed if he's on the list next year.
I'll be amazed if he's on the list next year. But, I mean, I think he's getting played under Teague. So, obviously, Teague's seeing something that we're not. But, you know, Lang's been played. And despite, you know, a couple of,
Yeah, well, and I guess it probably leads to the next bit. Is he getting played because we don't have anybody to bring in, or he's been given shown a little bit of faith and he's let the coaching staff down with his performances? And if that's the case...
Well, it might be a last roll of the dice for him. Obviously, the Northern Blues
on the
weekend.
Who's pushing up? And Northern Blues game.
We had a loss to Richmond on the weekend.
And it wasn't a great loss, was it?
No, it wasn't.
Especially, once again, that first half.
I think they kicked away to 37 points by the end of the first quarter, which is a pretty big margin by the first quarter. But there were some good players.
Go through them.
We had Kennedy had high 20s and a goal, I believe.
Yeah, and I think by all the reports, and I only saw half the game myself, but he looked the standout player. I think he had 27, 28 possessions or so, which is good because that's what we wanted him to do. If he was going to get dropped from the senior team for not getting enough of the ball, or he's gone back and got it and obviously played his more natural midfield position and role. So straight up, you're looking at a direct swap between Lang and Kennedy. And is that what you're thinking for next week?
I am. I know Dow had a good game. He had 22 disposals in the twos. I'm inclined to keep Dow down.
Yeah, look, work on his craft down there. That's what we wanted. We wanted to go down, get some touches because he wasn't getting them in the senior team.
No, hey, keep Dow down. I think potentially
you're enjoying saying that, aren't you?
Yeah, it rolls off the tongue quite nicely. but let him find some more form because he's had a pretty shocking season, to be honest.
Yeah, and I guess from some of the blokes that haven't played a game yet, there were some encouraging signs from Ben Silvani, who kicked a couple, I believe, and sort of harassed and chased and showed some of that Silvani desperation. So that was great to see. And was there anyone else for you stood out?
Cottrell. Oh, we spoke about Cottrell, didn't we?
No, we haven't spoken about Cottrell.
Did I not mention Cottrell?
No, I don't think so.
Well, he had, I think, 18 disposals.
And he's just building, isn't he?
Yeah.
And they're playing him off the halfback flank, and there's interviews with the coaches at halftime. Yeah. I know with Mick Agresta, the recruiter, about how he thought he was travelling this year, and he was a big rap for him and just said they've put him down there out of sort of necessity and, learn his craft there, and he's impressing everybody there. So, we know he can run all day.
So there's some, in a bad loss, there's some exciting signs of players that are pushing for selection.
Do you give anybody a chance at senior selection for the end of the year, or pretty much continue with the team we've got?
I think we continue with the team we've got at the moment, yeah. Yeah, well, I think Kennedy will come back in for Lang. I think Fisher will continue to get played despite me thinking he's had a pretty poor year and pretty poor month. So,
is there anybody else that needs to lift?
I think there is someone that needs to lift. Can you tell me who?
I think there's more than just someone. I think there's a few that need to lift.
And I think that will bring us into the next segment. Who is giving you the Bradley Pitts, Chris?
Straight off the top, umpires. What was going on the weekend?
Go on.
What was going on? Just generally, what was going on? Field umpires, no, goal umpires.
I had no fucking idea what was going on, to be honest.
Gee whiz. That's all I can say. There was some swearing at the television, I'm sure. Oh. I think I heard you from North Queensland.
Yes. I was... What stood out to
you
in that game?
Where
do you start?
Look, I think there's a few things. I mean, we spoke and we talked about, rest in peace, hands in the back or getting in the back of a player, especially in a tackling situation. You can just jump on them, sit on them, and you're not going to give away a free kick, and you're just going to reward the tackler as opposed to the person with the ball. It's disappeared, hasn't it?
Yeah.
It was red hot a couple of years ago, and it's disappeared.
Yeah, and look, we said last week, don't really want to be bashing the umpires too much, but
we'll bash them this week.
Do you know what? They've been terrible this year. Absolutely terrible.
Yeah, look, and I don't think that's just you or I or Carlton supporters. No. I think that's across the league. We know the review system is just an absolute joke, which, you might want to touch on that because you want to give it. You want to give it to the goal umpires.
I do, but just before that, can we go through that last quarter, Mark, after the siren, which resulted in a goal?
Yeah, well, lucky we are a place where we are. We're not in finals contention because that was ridiculous. You marked the ball clearly after the siren. The only person at that ground who purports to not know the siren had gone is that one umpire, surely.
But what happens if we were pushing for finals, you know, and it came down to percentage
matters. Or if Richmond, as Richmond, if they get into the finals or get a higher position in the finals, finish second or third.
Look, mistakes are going to be made, but that was.
Have we heard the umpiring department come out and explain that one yet?
Oh, I haven't heard anything today. I don't want to hear from him.
That's it.
Yeah, and look, kind of going on for my Bradley Pitts on that in that same vein. I think you touched on it. Goal umpires. Do you know what? Get rid of them. Get rid of them.
What are they doing?
What purpose do they serve?
Except for running 20 metres onto the ground after a goal when they're at the opposite end of the goal and hanging around, as we've witnessed a few times recently.
We saw the Mark Murphy goal, which was called a point, which then, thank God, got overridden and called a goal.
You don't have much to do you, if you're a goal umpire?
Do you know what you have to do? You have to watch a ball go through two big sticks. That's all you have to do. And then you go, oh, it's a point or a goal. What, they've just got absolutely no confidence, probably because they get undermined by the field umpire, and they cannot make a decision. They stand, get rid of them.
Bang.
Get rid of them.
Bang.
What? Why? Why are they there? No, honestly, why? For what reason?
It's a fair question at the moment.
All the goals get reviewed anyway.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Well, as far as we know, who knows what goes on in that room.
So what purpose do they serve?
Bang. You're putting them out of work.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's just every week there's a review. It's not the hardest thing. It's the decisions that the Murphy one wasn't even close to being a behind.
Yeah, well, look, move that on. I agree with you, but I'm ready to explode. And I've been wanting to for a couple of weeks, and you know this one.
Yeah.
Marking the football and when you step off your line. Mark it in the forward line. You can step 8 metres off your line to try to increase the angle. The umpire says, oh, bring it back. You know, step back as they do. They step back and then they step in favour of the angle again.
Yep.
Nothing happens there.
Mm.
Nothing happens. Then what happens to Mark Murphy when he's out of bounds? Takes a little step to kick in, bang, play on, and the call out of bounds from the time we had the kick. And even worse, Mitch McGovern.
Yeah.
He took a half step.
Thank God he kicked that.
And they were straight onto him. Where's the consistency
with
that umpire saying you're not on your line and they keep walking, no play on, go back, they creep more metres, and that's fine.
I think it's fair to say, and I dare say a lot of people would agree with this, but the umpiring's completely lost me in the AFL. I've played the game and watched the game my entire life. That's what we've grown up on. And I don't actually understand I just don't understand the rules that well anymore. It's so hard to know what's a free, what's not. It's also, you know, getting, you know, the disposal. How can you, if you get tackled, my understanding is, incorrect disposal.
Yeah.
If you drop it, if you don't kick it or handball it in a tackle.
Well, if you had prior opportunity and you've had the option and you've shimmied or you've turned or you've faked a handball and then you're tackled.
Yep.
It pops out without a clean disposal.
Yep.
But look, you know, we can say that and a lot of people defend them and we want to defend, we want them to be good. But
of course we want them to be
good. Everyone says how hard the game is to umpire. Hardest game in the world to umpire. I think that's a load of crap, the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know why? You know what's hard? Brain surgery.
Yep.
You don't see them fuck it up too often, do you?
No.
And there's serious consequences. So if we're going to get real, let's talk about what's hard, what's not.
Do they review it?
Maybe.
Oh, we made a mistake. We'll review the brain surgery. I don't know. I'm just... It's slowing the game review's slowing the game. Let's just go back to how it was. Do we need to review every single thing that we, you know, I just don't think we need to, and this is the problem, now that we've got it in place, they're relying too much on it. So either...
There's no confidence in the goal umpires. You either go one way or the other way.
And they do get overridden by the boundary umpires. They get, you know, obviously the goal reviews, but the goal review should be there for those real tricky ones. Not just when, oh, I'm not sure. Make the decision. Make a decision if a ball went through two big sticks.
Yeah, and look, I did see a good tweet which made me laugh about whether we'd had the umpires from the Edgbaston first test had made their way to the MCG for a Carlton-Richmond game. And, yeah, thought that was quite humorous and probably spot on.
Yep. Anyway, look, that's obviously given us the Bradley Pitts throughout the week.
That's a good Bradley Pitt.
And I don't want to... Do you know what? I hope we don't have to speak about it again.
But we probably will, won't we?
Yes. All right, well, let's look towards the Saints game this week. Saturday at the MCG, 1:45.
Battle of the caretaker coaches.
The battle of the caretaker. The caretaker coach extravaganza showdown.
Yeah, look, all attention will be on the coaches more so than on the field, and there'll be the coaches' boxes rather than the field of play.
Yeah, exactly right. Ratten's obviously doing a good job at St Kilda. Teague's doing a good job for us. I think both of them will probably keep their jobs as permanent coaches at both respective clubs.
As it stands at the moment, it seems that way. But talking of St Kilda, can you just give us a little idea of how you feel about them as a club?
I'm not a big Saints fan, no.
Any particular reason?
Well, we've always had a very poor history against St Kilda.
Well, not always. Not always. History.
No, the recent history. I kind of feel like we got belted by them for about 12 years straight.
We copped a lot of beltings during that period.
I know, but Saints always did it. And the problem is I used to go to the Saints games a lot and it just used to irk me. And
if I was going to ask you, do you feel they're a bit of a grubby club? What would your honest response be?
What do you mean, grubby?
You know exactly what I mean, grubby. answer the question.
Look, I don't hold them like I hold Richmond or Collingwood or Essendon.
Do you have respect for them?
No, I don't. No, I don't. Well, no, they haven't, you know.
Would it be great to beat them?
It'd be great to beat them. No, look,
ladder positions aside, it doesn't matter with this one. This is...
No, Saints have been a poor club for a long time. They obviously had that really good run, against Collingwood in the grand final. 2000 and... What was that? What was the replay?
2010 was
Yeah,
it?
So I, that I, no, I, do you know what? I certainly respected that team. Lenny Hayes, Rewalt, etc. But at the moment, you know, do you know what? They're having a better year than we are on the ladder. And I think it'll be a really good game. And
do we win?
Well, I think we're the favourites.
Oh, I think it's pretty much equal. Yeah, betting, which
I don't know if we do. I don't know if we do win because I think the Saints are just one of those bogey clubs for us.
Well, and if you think about it, they're ahead of us on the ladder. They've won more games for the year. They've been in good form recently.
Saints
they've won
have
a couple
been in
of
very
rows,
good form.
So,
yeah.
Look, we're going to have to bring our A game, but it's exciting to see, and it would be great to get a win against St Kilda at the MCG.
Look, I prefer to play them at the MCG than at Etihad or Marvel, where it's called now. But I think it's a really big danger game for us because kind of like how we always get a win over Essendon, kind of irrespective of how both clubs are going or how we sit on the ladder. I feel Saints are, I can barely remember beating the Saints.
Yeah, and look, if we're talking about the Caretaker Coaches Cup or the game with the two that are in contention, brings in a year definitely on board with Teague. I mean, where does Ratten sit with that? Because...
Yeah.
I find it strange that he's not mentioned a little bit more. And
for Carlton or for St Kilda?
For Carlton. I think for St Kilda, I think he gets the job there. But are we potentially shunning somebody?
No, I think he'll go through the process.
He hasn't to date.
Yeah, and he will. He will. I can understand why he hasn't thus far.
But, I mean, if you're talking about an experienced coach, and I've seen a few interviews where the St Kilda players are just all over him about how much he's taught them in the little time he's been there. So,
what about Brad Scott?
No,
not for Carlton, for St Kilda.
Oh, well, that was the talk originally.
Exactly.
That, that was sort of the manoeuvring that they were trying to do. But
I'd still be, I think a lot has dropped off about that, and I still think he's a big chance to coach there. But look, I think we will interview Ratten. I don't think it is appropriate, probably. Well, I think a lot of people don't feel it's appropriate that we interview before the season ends, whether or not that's from St Kilda more so than Carlton. But he'll definitely get interviewed, and I think he's still a good chance, Ratten, to coach. But if Teague wins on the weekend and we have a reasonable game against Geelong where we show, the promise and kind of fight we did against West Coast and Richmond, then...
Yeah. Yeah, and he hasn't hurt his chances, has he, David Teague, in the last two against two very good teams?
No, I don't think it would be fair to suggest that we're going to beat West Coast or Richmond.
No, but it does... I just hope that we don't get too caught up in the emotion. And, the 1979 reunion was on Friday lunchtime, I think, and he got a standing ovation there. I think we've just got to be careful to separate some of that passion and emotion from what is a very important decision. And look, you know, I've been sort of thinking about it myself recently, and you know, David Teague probably had it a little bit easier. I mean, Brendan Bolton's probably not a great example, but a coach that's been there and isn't getting the results they want has to stick to their process and what they've been teaching. And for Bolton, what was he, 4 years? Was he in his fourth year?
Yep.
So he can't suddenly come and chase wins easily by mixing it up too much, because then it demonstrates that everything has been, you know, preaching to the players falls apart. Whereas David Teague can come in, look for the immediate future, free up players and bring his own style, and he can look for the shorter term rather than the longer term, which means not potentially developing players like someone who's, you know, got a longer term contract in the role can or has to do. They have to look at the longer term, not just the immediate term, whereas those caretaker coaches can come in, get the best performance out, but it's potentially a short-sighted style and way to go about it. I'm not saying it is in David Teague's case, but there is the potential for that. So I think we just need to cool our jets a little bit and just make sure we're making sort of fairly unemotional decisions, and the process, you know, that great word, is actually being followed, because we need to get the best coach for the long term. And I hate to think we're here in a year and a half's time looking back and going, well, you know, we probably all got caught up a little bit and maybe that wasn't the right decision, because, you know, there's...
But on the flip side, I think if we don't take Teague, I think there might be a bit of a mutiny down at Carlton.
And that's the issue. That's not a great way to be making decisions, you know.
No, it's not. And look, there was an article, I think, in The Age talking about, you know, I think the days of Carlton getting a big coach like a Malthouse and a Pagan, Pagan, in fairness to him, came at a shocking time for the club. Malthouse,
he had Mick Martin, who could play in the ruck. He did play in the ruck.
Yeah, no, look.
He had a few
good players, but Malthouse was the worst decision we could have made, and I think we're still suffering from...
And we're burnt, aren't we?
We're still suffering because of the Malthouse era on some of those decisions.
Yeah, and look, I don't know who else there is. I mean, I still reckon they're trying to get Clarkson, and that would make a lot of sense, and I'd be upset if the club wasn't trying to chase him and, you know, continue to chase him, because circumstances can change. As much as I don't like him as an individual, we all know he's a great coach, and you've still got to try. Otherwise, there's probably not much else out there. But
no,
I just don't want to overlook Ratten at the same time, just because
he happens to be
a caretaker coach.
I don't think we will, but I think that might be a decision that maybe St Kilda are asking him to hold off until. But you know, then you run the risk
recruiting players. If there's no coach in place, how do you sell a club with no coach?
And you also run the risk that, you know, we saw North Melbourne sign
Reece Shaw
pretty quickly. So, you know, we don't want Ratten to get signed without actually interviewing for him. And look, I just think, I know that you're saying, let's not look back in a year and a half and say, you know, did we appoint a coach based on emotion?
Get caught up in the emotion.
Yep. But I am telling you now, if Teague isn't appointed coach, I think there'll be a lot of disharmony amongst supporters and probably a lot of people at the club. That's the feeling I'm getting. So speaking of the St Kilda game, we're going to do our little segment here, famous numbers, where we discuss, obviously, a famous jersey number of a Carlton player, a Carlton great.
A great or a character, or they don't have to necessarily be a champion.
No, they don't have to be. No, but do you know what? They're all great if they've worn the navy blue.
I'll hold you to that statement.
How beautiful is that? So,
who have we got this week?
Well, I thought,
in light, as you said, of the St Kilda game.
In light of St Kilda and going down that theme, I thought probably the most famous St Kilda player.
The greatest St Kilda player of all time.
Sorry,
is that what you're thinking?
The greatest,
is that what you're thinking?
The greatest St Kilda player of all time.
But this is a Carlton segment.
I know, but he came to our club.
Hit me.
Special fried rice. Dean Rice, number 23.
Special fried rice. Wow.
Where did he get that nickname? I think it was a
Rex Hunt.
A Rex Hunt.
It was a Rex Hunt when he was on fire for that period with the nicknames. Well, so, yeah, you brought him in. So he's St Kilda. He played a while there. How many games at St Kilda?
He played 116 games for St Kilda, which I couldn't believe. I thought he played a lot less than that.
Well, he qualified for the father-son with his son. So he had to play 100 games.
Yeah.
It was Bailey Rice, wasn't it,
who we
missed out on getting, but maybe we're not too upset now. But
he's not getting a game at the moment.
So was that 118 at St Kilda?
Yeah, no, 116 at St Kilda. 116, and I believe 118 at Carlton.
And so he was a delisted St Kilda player, is that correct?
That's correct, yeah. He did his knee in 93, I believe it was, and came to Carlton in 94.
I remember we didn't pay much, for him.
No, he had the bad knee, and then he did his knee again at Carlton.
Was that his first game for the Blues?
First game he did
his
knee.
So he's coming off a knee. Game, did his knee for the Blues.
Yep.
Wow.
But what a player Dean Rice was.
He certainly came back from that, didn't he? Because 95 premiership player. Our last premiership.
I put him in a... do you know what? He's in the top 22 toughest players at Carlton.
Yeah. You think of Dean Rice, you think of toughness, don't you?
I do. And do you know what? Dean Rice kind of reminds me a bit of your favourite player for Carlton.
Go on, Adrian Hickmott.
Yep.
Yeah, he's got a lot of Hickmotts about him, doesn't he?
He was a tough player.
Hard head. Ran straight at it, didn't he?
He was great, and he kicked a really good goal in the 95 grand final win over the Cats. So, look, in honour of Dean Rice, we're doing number 23. So, can you think of any 23s?
Not off the top of my... I mean, we've got the obvious one with Jacob Wiedering currently playing.
Yep, and we've discussed how happy we are with him at the moment.
And you're progressing very well. But look, 23, I would have thought a few more numbers, a few more players that spring to mind, but I can't really think of any.
So
you are the stat man.
I'll go through a Brownlow medalist, wore number 23.
Now, I'm a bit worried that I don't know any.
Bert Deacon, who played 98 games, 1944 to 1951. He would have been part of the 45 bloodbath.
Some excuse from that one. No, the name, just didn't know the number. Yeah,
no, that's fair enough. Look, there's a lot of players that have. There's five 100 game players. So Bert Deacon being one, though I just said he played 98, so that seems like it's an incorrect stat there. So poor work by the stat man. So John Chick was the other one. Paul Meldrum, Dean Rice, obviously with his 118 games, and the other 100 game player, Lachlan Henderson.
Oh, yeah, I guess I'd probably forgotten about that, shaking him from my memory.
Mm, playing many games at Geelong, is he? Or?
Well, I saw him actually play, I think it was last week, but then I think he's been dropped again, so he hasn't played many this year, and
no.
I can't say I'm too upset about that.
No, obviously very disappointed when he left the club and under the circumstances, and I don't want to speak about him anymore, put it that way.
Enough airtime.
Do you know what? And kind of going back to what we're talking about, the Saints, do you know one of the reasons I really dislike the Saints?
Yeah, good. You're opening up.
Yeah,
this
I'm opening
good.
Up.
This is therapy. You know, come on, get off your chest.
Aaron Hamill.
That still hurts you, doesn't it?
He was my favourite.
Hurts every Carlton supporter.
He was my favourite, and he went to Saints, and he went to Saints when, you know, they had Fraser Gehrig, and it was that really good era. And do you know what? This has actually been therapeutic.
Yeah, good. Because, I mean, we're talking a lot of years ago.
And a lot of hurt.
Maybe you haven't had the chance to discuss this.
No.
And you're hurt.
I probably haven't.
Well, you feeling better?
No.
Okay.
Not until... Maybe after Saturday.
Maybe when you reflect.
Maybe when I reflect. But that was one of the big...
Yeah, it was huge. And I think he's still at St Kilda now, so you get to see him in his St Kilda polo. I think he's an assistant coach, or he's line coach of some variety, so it still hurts, and still get the reminders, don't we?
He just was a great player, obviously. Big Hamill, number 36.
Yeah, big in 99, wasn't he?
Mm, yeah, absolutely. What year did we... When did we lose him? Probably wasn't long after 99,
No, I think it might have even been the next year, after a lot of effort to get him off at the tribunal when he dropped the knee.
Yeah, that's right.
In the Essendon game. It was a challenge. Was it even a court challenge, perhaps?
Or was it not Francina that got off?
No, I'm pretty sure Hamill dropped a knee.
Remember Francina
came back
in? And
he was going to miss.
Yeah, that's right.
And he got to play in the grand final. But
oh, well. No, cheers. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks, Aaron. All right. Just something that I've been thinking about, obviously. I think every Carlton supporter is thinking about is...
How do we improve? How do we get better for next year? And we're coming this time of the year.
Yeah, the trade period. And it's a big trade period this year, because obviously Stephen Cornelio from GWS looks set to depart. And I've got to be honest.
It depends who you listen to, but the jungle drums are beating a bit louder now that he's probably less likely to stay at GWS than he is to stay.
I'd say so. And, you know, the fact that he's probably done his knee... Also, probably helps his chances of moving. Might be time for a fresh start for him in that kind of sense.
And yeah, no, look, I think there's going to be plenty of money for him because he is an absolute jet.
He, I mean, Gary Lyon made a comment the other day, was it that he would be the best, potentially the best GWS player to have left that club. And I actually, for once, tend to agree with Gary Lyon on that one because he's much better than Scheel.
Yeah, I'm in agreeance.
I'm really glad that we didn't.
Yeah, we avoided that. We That's avoided how I that look Scheel at it now.
Trade. But Canelio would just add another dimension in that midfield.
Straight away. Pairing with Cripps.
And Walsh.
Jeez, that's exciting, isn't it? And he's 25, 26 max, I think. So he's still got a lot of good football. He's coming into his prime. If you could pick him up without having to trade or losing any assets, that would be huge. But the one issue is, our mate, Fitzy the Trade Whisperer, says he's not coming to Carlton.
No,
he certainly is going to Hawthorn.
Says he's going to, and Fitzy's a Hawthorn supporter, so.
Is he? that's debatable, but yeah. Yeah, look, the Hawthorn, certainly his name was being mentioned there, but there has been a bit of a shift lately, hasn't there, to Carlton? So
I don't think Hawthorn is not a destination club as it was a few years ago.
It is a bit different, but I mean, whilst Clarkson's there and you know, it still is Hawthorn, they've shown themselves and proven themselves to be a very good club. So that's the hard part, and that's the bit we've got to convince that's where we're heading, and that's where we're very close to being better. It'd be a huge pickup.
A huge pickup. And I think, to be honest, the best thing that we've done in terms of, unfortunately, sacking Bolton, we've had Teague come in, we've won these games, that is just a massive, you know, advertisement for these free agent players and players that want to come. For once, I'd say we're more of a destination club than a lot of other clubs. And that, unfortunately, was never the case at Carlton for the last 2 decades.
Yeah, and that's what I was wondering. Does that force our hand in the coaching situation? Because I know players going to sign a long-term contract at a club that doesn't have an appointed coach and they don't know who they're going to be playing under. So, you know, I have some concerns due to that reason, but...
Yeah, and we're going to have to watch this space, but, you know, hopefully over the next couple of podcasts...
Go get him, Blues. Get him. Get him.
He announces that he's going to come back, and to be honest, if I was a youngish midfielder... You know, the Carlton's a pretty exciting place, obviously, to come. We've got a great young midfield. Our forwards, exciting. And, you know, I'd be wanting to come to Carlton.
Yeah, let's hope he looks at the longer term rather than the shorter term. And I'm sure he'll have plenty of coin thrown his way, which might help with the decision a little bit. But operation.
And he'd know a lot of GWS players who are at Carlton.
That's true. He'd have a lot of friends at the club, wouldn't he? So, yeah, operation. Get Canelio, please.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, goes to kind of the discussion about, you know, how much do we pay him? Because as much as I want to throw an open checkbook at him, you can't pay him more than Cripps. I just don't like...
Have you changed your tune from the other night?
I have. Look, yeah, I don't like someone getting paid more than our captain.
And possibly the best player in the league.
Exactly right. I don't think
it just doesn't seem right, does it?
Nah, look, give him close to it. You know, I think Paddy Cripps is probably one of those players that, you know, kind of one of those blokes that wouldn't actually care too much about it, but I just don't think it's...
It wouldn't be right.
No,
it's
not right. No. You know, I think Paddy would say, you know, he'd be selfless enough and not have that much of an ego that he'd take a player of the class of Canelio just for the betterment of Carlton. But yeah, I'd pay him close to what Cripps is getting paid. Pay him second highest player, that's fine. But don't blow... You know, it creeps out of the water with a massive...
And look, exactly right. And look, we might only have two more games left to play, but the trade period's going to heat up, and we know that's an exciting period.
Yeah,
so there's going to be plenty for us to talk about coming
shows.
So if you like our show, follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle @the_bluebaggers.
Or on Instagram, @the_bluebaggers_podcast, and you can find us on Instagram.
Thanks for listening to this episode. We are
the Blue Baggers.